Okay, we are live. So hi, Supernaturals. And I want to say hi to my community members in the Hair Scripts Facebook group. We are here today with Amarita Jones. This is a very different episode. And I'm very, very excited about this because usually we have experts on the show to talk about different scalp conditions and treatments and ways that we can, you know, try as far as to restore our hair as much as we possibly can. But Amarita Jones is different. She is an alopecia advocate. She started experiencing her own hair loss, and she's going to tell her story to its full extent. But, you know, as you can obviously see, I like to call her a bold baddie. She is all beauty, and she is here because she is going to share her story with us, what it took to get from where she was to where she is today. And there's so many gems. So we're just going to jump right in. Amarita Jones, please introduce yourself to, you know, the Hair Scripts community, to the Supernaturals podcast. Tell us your story. How did you get to this point? I know it's going to be a couple of, you know, it takes a long time to tell the whole story, but just start us from the beginning. How about that? How it started?
Yeah, absolutely. So firstly, you know, thank you, Beverly, so much for inviting me, for having me here to have this great conversation. Thank you, Supernaturals, and everyone in the Hair Scripts community for having me in your space. I'm so excited to be here and get to talk to you guys today. So a little bit about me. I'm a social worker. I was born and raised in New York City. You know, and I'm really passionate about like social justice and equity for people of color, especially in areas of education and advocacy work. So about me with alopecia and hair loss. So I have alopecia universalis. So for folks who may not have heard about alopecia, or maybe you're sharing this with a loved one, alopecia is an autoimmune disease, and that disease causes hair loss. And the universalis part of it is the type. So the universalis type is where you experience hair loss throughout your entire body. So sometimes that can be no eyelashes, no eyebrows, no nose hairs, or even like hair on your knuckles and things of that sort. And the hair loss is generally, you know, caused, and that's a result of the autoimmune disorder, because your immune system looks at your hair follicles like it's a threat to the body. So your immune system reacts and it attacks and it destroys your hair follicles, which then causes the hair loss to occur. There's not like necessarily a known or a confirmed cause for it. Right. But like some doctors may end up telling you, or like if you look it up online for like, you know, Google doctor. But there are a lot of strong factors that are considered like genetics, hereditary, external factors, whether that can be, you know, stress or trauma to the hair follicle or hormonal issues. It can be a lot of different things. So for me personally, mine is hereditary, and then it gets exacerbated with stress. So my father has alopecia, but he has a different type.
Okay.
So rather than having universalis like I do, he has areata multilocularis.
Okay.
Which is essentially where there are bald spots or bald patches throughout the scalp. But he has eyebrows, he has eyelashes, you know?
Gotcha. Amarita, let me interject really quickly because I want you to get through your story. But how soon did you start noticing the hair loss? Because obviously this is hereditary, you said. So was this something that you started experiencing in childhood, or, you know, you were fine in childhood and then at some point you started losing your hair?
So I had it throughout childhood. So I had it as early as about 3 years old.
Okay.
So for me, like my memories that I have like start out and I already am not having hair, or I'm having like a little bit of hair left. So like I started grade school with no hair. Like I was in grade school, or I remember being like just before kindergarten, like being in the park or like playing with kids, and wearing like hats. And then when I started school, I was wearing bandanas. So I've had it from the age of 3, and okay. I'm 25 now.
Oh, wow. Okay. So talk to me about how that was like for you as a child. Maybe not as a, you know, as a 3-year-old, as a toddler, but now going into middle school, you know, as kids start to, you know, become a little meaner, you know, even elementary school. How was that for you?
So, you know, just like you said, some kids were mean. It was a little rough, if I'm being honest with you. For me, you know, I didn't realize that I was different for not having hair until other kids would bring it up.
Okay.
So I experienced a lot of it when I started grade school, even just elementary school, because I transitioned from wearing, you know, hats, because my mom had me wear hats for like, you know, the weather and not being cold in the sun.
Right.
And when I started school, I remember there was an incident just before like the school year started. where I was in the park and some kids were, you know, teasing me because I always had a hat on. They wanted to know why. So they knocked the hat off. And that experience, you know, at that age was like traumatizing for me. Yeah. So when I started school, my parents had me wear bandanas because you can tie the bandana in the back of like your head.
Right.
Which still caused some attention. So, you know, throughout grade school, middle school, and even high school, I did have a lot of run-ins with like some bullying. And an interesting part too was that if it wasn't, you know, bullying, then it was, you know, kind of like an alienation. So I had some experience where, you know, there would be like girls in like a group that I would hang out with who would be having conversations. And for me, I noticed it to be like bonding, right? Because you're talking about, you know, puberty's happening.
Right.
We're having to start to shave and hair's in weird places.
The next question for you. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I wasn't having that experience. So I wasn't having like anything to contribute to the conversation, or I wasn't sure what was going to be comforting at that time. And then my silence in turn was, oh, well, you're so lucky because you don't have to deal with this.
Right.
When I felt the opposite, you know, at that age, I was like,
you wanted it.
Yes. And even if it wasn't like for the, you know, the look of like having hair, if it wasn't that, then it was also wanting to have something to connect with other people with. Because I felt that a lot when I was a kid. So throughout grade school and high school, it was constantly, you know, that feeling of there was always something missing for me to connect more with people.
Wow. I can't believe that hair could make you feel like you can't connect with someone or the lack of it. Talk to me about puberty and talk to me about dating for you. How was that like? You know, now you're getting older. You're starting to find boys attractive or girls, you know, and talk to me about that. How did you feel about that?
So dating was challenging in ways I didn't understand until I was older. So even like having crushes on certain people, I was almost like that person of like, oh, like she likes you. And not really understanding that it could be because of my hair, because I, you know, if I was still someone that like was fun to hang out with, or you would tell me, it was a lot of a feeling like you like me, but you don't like me. And it was because of my hair. And I didn't realize that piece until conversations in high school. So like, for example, I didn't think this way until I had a best friend, like freshman year of high school, and she wanted to shave her hair. There was a style where like you shaved half of your head and the other half was a little longer.
Right.
And she was telling her boyfriend and he was like, ew, no, you can't do that. Like a girl.
You heard the conversation.
Yeah. So we were sitting together for like lunch and it was like, you can't do that. A girl should always have more hair than her boyfriend. And that stuck with me. You know, I don't think at the time that he maybe realized the impact that it could have been. But for me, it stuck with me.
Right.
So dating was hard because I was, you know, likable enough to be like a best friend, but not quite to be someone that you wanted to be with, or like, you know, in high school, like to show off in the hallway or like to pick up from class. So it was challenging. And then what I did run into was that then, you know, the first person who liked me, that was like my world. And I didn't think that I was going to do better than that. Right. Even when stuff was like either not healthy or things were toxic. For me, even when I realized that, I still believed that I wasn't going to have anyone else who was like me
enough at the time. And now you're talking about, you know, self-esteem, you know, low self-esteem. And this is very interesting because we're going to have a lot more, like I say, bald baddies on the show sharing their story. And we always talk about people who had hair and then eventually lost it. But like you said, for you, it was as early as 3. But yet there's still so many similarities with the ramifications on your psychological health, your mental health. Right. Now, let's talk about transitioning into, you know, adulthood, young adulthood. And maybe the introduction of things like YouTube and social media. And now you're seeing that there's wigs and lace fronts, et cetera. Were you, did you subscribe to that? Did you say, you know what, I'm going to start wearing wigs, you know? Was that something that you decided to do? And how was that experience for you?
Yeah, so there's a couple like pieces for this. So yes, I did totally see, you know, wigs that were coming into play, or just different ways to, you know, accessories to add on to really like rock your look and feel confident and be like the baddie that you were talking about, right? And for me, I didn't realize that my hair loss also was almost like a disconnect for me culturally, because, you know, I come from a multiracial family. So, you know, to identify and to be a Black woman, I didn't have anyone to connect with and kind of like teach me even like, you know, the process of like looking for hair to buy or like wigs. That was totally foreign to me. I didn't know anything about it until I started looking in college. And then I realized this is a whole new world of fun right. things and amazing things that I can do.
Right.
So even now, sometimes that's still like a growing process for me to get comfortable and to allow myself to experience that, because right. I haven't been able to like know the right questions to ask. Like I remember being on YouTube and not realizing that you could have like the got to be glue to stick like the lace on to your head. So when I started wearing wigs, I was like constantly like trying to fix it and have it not slide, not knowing that there were so many other, you know, products and ways to make it fit and be custom for me.
Right.
So
but you're open to, it's not something that you've ruled out or decided not to go with. It's just something you still have to kind of get into and learn. It's hard. It's hard for us out here.
Yeah.
You have an arrogant tay, you know, it's not easy. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about at what point, because going back to you feeling like, you know, when you did find someone who liked you, that they were your everything, you became very clingy, or you had like an attachment style. Did that, because it's a journey, right? So I wouldn't expect you to say I'm completely healed or, you know, delivered, right? But tell me about when did the change happen? Or when did you start to work on your self-esteem and say, you know what? No, you know, I am enough. You know, I do deserve better. I can be loved. I'm lovable. When did that happen?
So I think for me, it started from maybe like an unconventional and maybe even a shallow place. But, you know, when it's self-esteem, it comes down to those things. Like what is it about the aesthetic? What is it that sometimes is shallow? But it's some of the building blocks that come with with self-esteem.
Right. So
when I was in high school in my senior year, you know, I was still wearing bandanas and prom was coming. And I realized I did not want to wear a bandana with my prom dress. So coming to, you know, that conundrum of trying to problem solve and trying to find ways to do it, I realized that nothing was going to give me the look I wanted. And I had a moment where I wanted to be able to look back at the photos of prom and have that feeling and look as glamorous and princess-like as all the other girls did, right? Whether that was in, you know, personal photos, right? Or on Facebook later to look back at memories, or even just like the photos of girls who are modeling these dresses, right? On websites. And I had that moment of, you know, even if I don't have hair, I deserve and I can look glamorous and I can right. do this. And I didn't wanna be in my pictures wearing a bandana. So that kind of sparked the moment of when I did in fact show up to prom as, you know, a 17-year-old in high school, totally bald, no transition. I just showed up and I didn't have my bandana on. And seeing how there were so many people who loved it and I got such positive feedback and they were like, it's gorgeous, beautiful. This is amazing. Like, we would have loved if you did this throughout high school. I would have never known.
This is a gem right here. This is, you know, I'm trying to, you know, I'm not Oprah, you know, I'm not Oprah, but you know, I do. She's auntie. She don't know me yet, but she's auntie. And she always say, oh, this is that aha moment, right? Because what you realized there was when you accepted yourself, that's when other people accepted yourself. When you loved yourself, right? That's when people were like, oh my gosh, like, look how beautiful you look. It finally took that point for you. So it's almost like what you do to yourself or how you treat yourself, you're going to project that onto others and people are just going to treat you accordingly, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about how you got into this work. Like, how did you become an alopecia advocate and exactly what are you doing to help other women like you?
Yeah, so when I, you know, continue that experience and then I started college, right? I made a promise to myself after, you know, prom and after graduating that I wasn't going to go back, that I deserved to not have to hide so much of who I am. You know, I at that point, you know, I have identified as, you know, being a bald girl, a bald woman throughout my entire life. And I felt that I didn't need to hide who I was anymore. You know, and if I had solid friends throughout that time, I was going to continue to have solid friends.
Right.
And through that time, I started using my, you know, my personal Instagram as a platform. And I started to initially share more pictures of myself, you know, with my bald hair, being unapologetic of who I was. And I got such a positive feedback that I kept going, I kept doing it. And a modeling agency that was starting out reached out to me. And they asked if I wanted to come in for a casting call, and I came in, and they were like offering classes about, you know, like doing like your walk and like just like improving and like doing development for you if you wanted to be in the modeling world. So I was with them for a little bit. And when I was, you know, building up my portfolio and I was posting the photos, I was getting a huge, I had opened a new world into a community of folks with alopecia. Mm-hmm. When growing up, I didn't have any of that. The only person who had alopecia in my life was my dad. And he wasn't a woman and a woman of color who needed to have like hair to connect with others. Or it was a different experience. So when I used my Instagram and I found this whole new world of so many women and people and, you know, even mothers who were reaching out and telling me, you know, like, I showed my daughter your photos and she can't wait to go to school without like her like bandana or her hat on. And that just the feeling that I got from reading that and knowing that, you know, there was a young child or even like a girl like me when I was that age who didn't have that.
Right.
And now it's like, look, like you can do like there's so many other people.
Right.
That was like the catalyst of like, I got to keep doing this. I have to keep putting myself out there, whether it's to spread awareness or to serve as representation. So that's how I got into that work of seeing. And, you know, getting like direct messages, you know, from people starting conversations, whether it was, you know, they had just started to be out with their baldness, or that they were transitioning and they weren't quite ready. And, you know, asking for my story, asking how I got started, and them sharing with me that it had made a difference for them.
Wow. What's the biggest impact that being bald has on, you know, the alopecia community, or just having scarring alopecia?
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, finding a way to, I think it's really hard with the standard of beauty in the world that we live in.
Right.
And it's, you know, then glamorized where if you are a model, that's when it's acceptable to not have hair, right? Because it's one thing if it's, you know, on America's Next Top Model or if it's on any show or any sort of like mass media that's happening. But when it's in our smaller communities, it's not okay, right? There's a lot of comments that get thrown around like, oh, like she's bald headed or like, you know, or it gets used as an insult.
Right.
So, you know, for lack of better wording, the energy is not the same, right? If it's done in the media, it's the new thing, it's hot, it's sexy, like, oh my gosh, do it. And you know, when you're hanging out, you know, or you're like in your smaller communities or you're just like chilling with some people, then it's like, oh, well, like you need to get a wig or you need to do this, or
they're still trying to put a wig on you.
Mm-hmm. They're still trying to have you fit into more of a box of what, you know, the comfortable standard of beauty is, when right. It doesn't have to be in that box of, you know, having eyebrows or having the eyelashes. And there's even, you know, people who do makeup on YouTube or makeup gurus, and they will intentionally not have their eyebrows so then they can create these new looks for themselves, right? But when we do it and it's in our regular life and our day-to-day, it's not up to the bar.
Right. And that hasn't really changed over time.
It hasn't. So there's been some more awareness to it. And the last thing that I had actually seen, I think there was actually a makeup guru who had done something that was they felt was a prank. And there were a lot of people in the alopecia community who did not think it was a prank. And rightfully so, right? Because while that can be something that's temporary that you can put on with makeup, for many of us, right, that's our everyday, that's our reality.
Right.
And sometimes a reality that you know, we're still trying to have peace with. You know, there are some good days, and then there's some days that are, you know, not so great, and we're just trying to hope that tomorrow will feel like a better day.
Right.
So moments like that will remind me that, like, while there's still awareness, and now if you say alopecia, there's some more folks in the room who may know what it is, that there is still some work to do with breaking that overall mold of what beauty should be.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What message do you have for women? Because in our community, we have women who are experiencing some form of hair loss, whether it's mild hair loss or all the way severe, right? Whether it's through postpartum hair loss, being, you know, perimenopausal, menopause, et cetera. And they're kind of doing everything. They're here because they want to learn what they can do to regrow their hair effectively. But as we have several experts on the show that come in and they explain to us there's a difference between scarring alopecia and non-scarring alopecia. And there's opportunity for you to either restore your hair in some cases, there's opportunity for you to, you know, maintain what you still have on your head. And there's just situations where there's nothing that we can do for you. That, you know, I've had one Dr. Sherry Graham that said, you know, board certified dermatologist, she said that hair loss is time. You know, the longer it takes for you to go see a professional, the more time, the longer, you know, pretty much the harder it is to restore your hair. It can be scarred. I want to take the stigma out of officially losing your hair, right? Like when you're at that point, when you're in that bracket where there's nothing you can do to get it back, what message do you have for those women? That's my question. Who now realize they've gone to doctors and doctors say there's nothing we can do for you. There's no more treatments. There's nothing else. You know, what is it that you have? What can you say to them?
Yeah, I think one thing that I would say to take away, you know, come as you are and know that exactly as you are is beyond worth it. It's beyond worth it. Even if, you know, external or people who are outside of you think that, you know, your worth is connected to your worth is not connected to your hair. You know, you can do so many things and, you know, you can have so many experiences in life, but how you show up exactly as you are is always going to be worth it, even when it doesn't feel that way. And, you know, the changes that you're going through and, you know, accepting that this is, it may be a new identity for you and embracing it, you know, is easier said than done. And that's okay, right? Mm-hmm. So still have, you know, the kindness and the patience that you would have for a loved one who's sharing an experience like that with you for yourself, because you yourself is a loved one.
Right.
You know, a lot of it will come with learning yourself again, learning your body and learning your identity. And that takes time and that's totally okay, right? It's a journey and everyone's journey is different, you know, so don't do the comparison road of, you know, it may have taken someone X amount of time and they're 100% okay with it too, especially if you see it on social media and online, because, you know, something that I even remind myself at times is, you know, online, it's the highlight reel, right? You get to see what everyone is preparing to post or to share. And it's okay if you still have bad times. I still have bad times. And I think it's been about like 18 years that I haven't had hair. So some days will be good and some days may not be good, but you are absolutely worth it. And every moment and minute and second of time that it takes, that's perfectly fine.
Thank you, Amarita. Tell us about your community for women who wants to connect with other women experiencing hair loss or who have alopecia.
Yes. So for connecting with me, like with alopecia and everything, I'm on Instagram. You can type it up. It's Amorlinda, which is just Amor, which is A-M-O-R. And then it's connected with my middle name. So it's L-I-N-D-A with two underscores. If you ever want to talk about like your hair loss or alopecia or just, you know, want to chat about your experience, my inbox is always open. And then connected to that too, I have a community that's called Thriving Ova. And Thriving Ova is a space that I created for women of color to come together and have a community when talking about their health, their reproductive health, anything with women's health.
Amarita, thank you so much for joining us today. This, I'm telling you, you have no idea what you started. This is going to really be a whole internal series now, because we talk a lot about what to do externally, but I appreciate you being on the show today. And please don't be a stranger.
No, not at all. Thank you so much for having me here and having this conversation. I love this. It was very like warming, and it was food for the soul. So thank you for having me.
Yes. Good job. Take care.
You too.
Bye.